broadcasting live from London every Friday from 9 to 11 p.m., 4 to 6 Eastern, the Soul Seekers bring you the latest topics and most influential guests in the paranormal world right here on Para-X Radio.
This is James Riley from Ballistic FM, and you are listening to the best in everything paranormal on Soul Seekers Supernatural Radio.
Out our website at soulseekers.org.uk.
This is the Para-X Radio Network.
Hi, Kurt Smith here, telling you to listen to Soul Seekers Supernatural Radio, Friday evenings, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Para-X Radio Network.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Soul Seekers Supernatural Radio. I'm Gil, your host. Sarah Jane's in the chat room on Para-X. Tonight we've got a great show. I'm sure some of our Para-X listeners will be familiar with our guest, Mr. Robert Honeycutt from the Georgia Ghost Society. He is also a representative of the American Ghost Society. He has loads of experience under his belt in the paranormal field. And Robert, are you with us?
Yes, I'm right here.
How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Great. How about you?
Not too bad, thanks. Thanks for joining us tonight and being on the show with us.
Glad to do it. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Why don't we get started from the beginning? I ask most of my guests how you got into the paranormal investigation field.
Well, like a lot of other people, I had a personal experience. Back in 1976, I was 17 years old and was living in Tucson, Arizona. And it was during the bicentennial. And was taking part in a bicentennial play,
mm-hmm.
and was just an extra. And during one of the dress rehearsals, we'd been told when we were finished for the night to take all of our wardrobe back to the wardrobe department. And being 17 years old, my focus was more on the young women that were there. So I ended up being one of the last ones to get back and take my clothes. And as I walked in the room, it's not a very big room, you know, maybe 12 by 14 room. There was a lady sitting at a table sewing, you know, by hand.
Right.
And really didn't pay that much attention. We never made eye contact or anything. And I set my my clothes down on the table and turned around to leave. And then I remembered that I had torn a button or something. So I turned right around within a matter of 2 seconds to tell her, and she was gone. And I was standing in between her and the only door. There were any closets or anything else like that. So naturally, the first thing I did was start walking around trying to find her.
Right.
Totally perplexed and confused. And within, you know, a few minutes, some of the other theater people came in, and I guess they could see by the look on my face that I was kind of, you know, taken back by something, and they asked, and I told them what had happened. And one of them started to laugh and said, "Well, you've seen the theater ghost." And evidently it was reported to be a theater employee who worked in a wardrobe, and evidently she loved her job so much that she decided she would stay on.
No kidding.
And, oh, yeah, I mean, it just, and you've got to remember, too, at that age, of course, most people at 17 think they know it all and have a grip on everything. But it literally, you know, tore a hole in my whole belief system at that point. You know, when you're kids, you're always told there's no such thing as ghosts, there's no such thing as monsters, there's nothing under the bed.
Right.
And this kind of proved it wrong. So, naturally, you know, I tried to get as much information as I could at the time. Of course, back in 76, we didn't have the internet and all the information available to us, but fortunately, living in Arizona, there were so many haunted places already, Tombstone and other surrounding cities. So I got to listen to other people tell the ghost stories and the experiences they had. And it wasn't long after that that I went into the military. And I guess back in the early to mid-80s, I don't know, it was just something that rewoke. I remember watching a documentary or something and it triggering that memory, and ever since then I've been in it.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, right now, completely consecutive, I'm probably doing this going on 24 years now. And it has never lost its flavor or its amazement to me. No matter where I go, you know, I've been fortunate enough to have some really good experiences and work with some really great people. And, you know, I'm 50 now, and I'm hoping that I'll continue to be able to do this, you know, for another 50 years.
I hope so. That's interesting. that's really interesting, because I was about, my first experience was, which was about the same age, I might have been a year younger, but my first experience was also in a theater that I was working in, and I was doing the props and the scenery for, I forget what production it was, and this was up in Michigan, and it was just me and one other guy working up in the prop room, which was upstairs off of the balcony in one of the rooms, and there was a piano on the stage, and it started playing by itself. I mean, we could hear piano music. We went out because we thought we were the only ones in the building. We were standing on the balcony, and there was nobody else in the whole theater. And the, you know, it was, when we walked out onto the balcony, it stopped. But we both definitely heard it. And that's interesting. Our first experiences were both in the theater about the same age. But I didn't pay much attention to ghosts or supernatural for many years after that, actually, till I moved over here to England. But that's really cool.
Well, you know, what's so funny is I had already, you know, had an interest in the paranormal. At that age, I was really into ufology. That was when they were coming out with all the Chariot of the Gods movies,
right,
and Footprints of the Gods. And I was this little nerdy kid that would go to the movie theater with a notebook in his hand and take notes. But it was just something about the supernatural that hits you on a level that like nothing else does.
Right.
I mean, it tells you real quick that there's more, you know, to our existence in these bodies than what most people think.
Yeah, UFOs were always, I've always been fascinated by that also. And like I said, it wasn't until I moved over here to England that I really, you know, got into ghosts, because my wife, Sarah Jane, you know, is a sensitive. And the house we live in here is definitely haunted. It's built on the grounds of an old workhouse, which is part of the old prison systems, but it was for homeless people and vagrants and just people that weren't very well off, and they didn't treat the people very well in them. So there's a lot of residual energy in this house. So yeah, that's really cool. What do you think are the major differences for someone who becomes interested in the paranormal today, you know, in the present, than let's say when you got involved in it?
Well, I think there are a lot of main differences. Of course, number one, like I said, there was no internet.
Right.
You had very little, if any, sources whatsoever to do any kind of research or, learning. You know, we were able to go to libraries, and find some of the older books. We were able to go to old bookstores. And then, of course, you would run into people either like in Tombstone or other people that were into the, far left side of the paranormal.
Right.
And, of course, today there is so much information available to people. The problem you get with that is a lot of them are various or different viewpoints from the other one.
Right.
And I think people really get overloaded and have a hard time interpreting or ciphering, which one works best for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps them to a point, I think, that the paranormal has become so popular now with television shows.
Exactly.
But at the same time, I think it's really a hindrance to them because people watch these shows and they automatically assume that that's a how-to manual.
Sure.
And they start trying to follow their examples.
Mm-hmm.
And they're too quick to try to get into it on their own instead of joining a team and learning it from the ground up.
All right, I agree. They've just, ever since the programs have come out, especially over here, paranormal groups have just popped out of the woodwork everywhere. Everybody all of a sudden wants to be on the bandwagon and be a ghost hunter.
Oh, absolutely. Is it absolutely
the same over there than in the States?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I can remember probably before, ghost hunters first came out, there were probably anywhere from 80 to 100 internet websites that were even affiliated with ghosts and hauntings.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those were, different teams. And now I don't think you could reasonably try to count them. Georgia has at least 20 to 30 teams that I'm aware of.
Right.
Whereas when we first got started, there were probably only two or three other teams.
No kidding.
Yeah, because this year, this is our 10th year, our 10th anniversary this year.
Mm-hmm.
And of course I had worked with other teams before that. And I think really what's happened with the popularity is, just like you said, people are jumping on the bandwagon because it's something new and exciting.
Right.
And I have no doubt that when the popularity and the flair begins to fizzle out, then people are going to be dropping it and moving on to the next popular thing.
I'm sure. You're probably right. Now, the Georgia Ghost Society, is that the name of your group or is that an organization?
Well, it's the name of our organization, and we are also a team.
Mm-hmm.
We started this group primarily because we saw some benefit in working with the historical locations here in the state, and it also had taken care of residential cases and private homes. So for the longest time here in the South, and I think other areas in the country were doing the same thing, instead of embracing these historical places, they were tearing them up, tearing them down, and putting up new buildings or even building a parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
So it really caught our attention that if we can start focusing some attention back onto them, especially if they have a haunting attached to them, we'll benefit and so will they.
Right.
And we have, I don't consider our group quite like so many others. I run it completely like a business, even though we are nonprofit and do not charge.
Mm-hmm.
All of our members are required to submit an application, and they go through two interviews, and then we vote on who we think would be the biggest asset. Mm-hmm. We undergo training. We have a very strict dress code and code of ethics. And, I try to keep people that are on the same belief
sure.
system as myself. I've seen and I respect other people's views, and especially in the paranormal, there's so many.
Mm-hmm.
But I like to know that if something happens and I'm not at a location, that they're going to conduct it as close to as possible if I were there.
Right, that's excellent. That's really good. It's too bad more groups don't do the same.
Well, and there are some good people here in Georgia, you know, and of course one of the best ones that I know of is Patrick Burns.
Sure.
You know, he's a good guy. He's been a big influence on not only myself, but other people.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be willing to let people know that, you know, just because you're new, you know, I'm willing to help. I'm willing to share any information or ideas I have. Only thing I've ever asked is that people take this serious. It's not a form of entertainment. It's
right.
not something to go out and get your scare on.
Right.
And it's something that has become a way of life for myself. This is all I do now.
Isn't it?
Between the investigations and the team
mm-hmm.
and public speaking appearances and things like that, this is all I do now. And I don't mind devoting so much time to it because I believe in it so much. And I, you know, I'm a perfectionist.
Right.
You know, I'm never satisfied the way it is now. I want to see if I can make it better.
That's very admirable. That's great. Now, the American Ghost Society, you're the Central Georgia rep for that?
Right. The American Ghost Society, fortunately, all three, or the three representatives for the American Ghost Society are members of our group.
Mm-hmm.
Drew Hester, who is the associate co-director, is in North Georgia. I take care of the central part of the state, and then the southern part is taken care of our lead investigator, Don Graham. And Troy Taylor has been a tremendous help to us. He was in the mix from the get-go when I decided to start my own group, and it's such an amazing organization, you know, a network that you have all this information and experience available to you. And I try to tell people all the time that just because I've done this so long does not mean by any stretch of the imagination that I know it all. I don't think anybody does. We're learning a little bit every day.
Now, for the listeners here in England, the American Ghost Society, can you tell the people a little more, you know, about them and what they do?
Absolutely. The American Ghost Society is a network of paranormal investigators and ghost hunters throughout the United States. It's not a group in itself, but it's a network to where we can share ideas, you know, give information for particular locations. We get cases from them, referrals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can go on their website for those that are interested in it. PrairieGhosts.com, and we have a link for it on our website.
Okay.
And they have representatives throughout the country. And the one thing that I've always liked about Troy is that he has the same mindset that I do. I like to have an organized approach to anything. You know, that way, if you do it the same way every single time, you know, you'll get the most results over and over and over again.
Right. Now, what is your website for the listeners?
Our website is www.georgiaghostsociety.com, and we have our website is probably a little different from some of the other ones. You'll see we have very little video, audio, or photographs, and the reason for that is that our website is an information site for people who are experiencing these things and need our assistance. It's
mm-hmm.
not there for anyone's entertainment.
Right.
We do have, you know, certain items on there from some of our best investigations. I like to call some of our better evidence, but I try not to plaster just every little photograph and video there is.
Right.
You know, people, I think you can go on any website now and see every kind of photograph imaginable. And if they're just looking for that, there's plenty out there for them.
Sure.
I just want people to know who we are, what we do, and how to contact us.
That's great. That's great. Now, you said, well, first of all, how many people are in your team?
Well, right now we have an active membership of 12.
Mm-hmm.
We do have inactive members or associate members that are located around the country. Two of our oldest members, who what I consider our core members, are members of the military, and right now he and his wife are stationed in Washington State. And he is stationed overseas right now. Then we have people in Kentucky, Jason Lewis, and then, of course, my personal manager and our promotions director is Vanessa Moe. She's in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've got some really good people. They're very dedicated to what we do, and they're willing to go the extra mile to make sure that it's done correctly.
That's excellent. What kind of, you mentioned training for all your members. What kind of training do you do?
Well, because we are members of the American Ghost Society, we use their handbook as a training guide.
Uh-huh.
And what we do is we, you know, encourage them to become a member of the American Ghost Society if they choose to. But we use their methods and their techniques. We train them how to use the equipment, how to set it up. We teach them the proper way to use the infrared equipment to do an EVP.
Mm-hmm.
You, like I said before, you've got so many different people doing things so many different ways that sometimes they really don't mesh well.
Right.
So if we keep everybody on the same page and going in the same direction, I think you get a lot better and positive results.
I agree. Now, do some of your members specialize, like, do you have one or two people that specialize like in EVPs and another member specialize in a different piece of equipment?
Oh, absolutely. For example, Drew Hester, our co-director, he is geared more towards the psychology and the science. So he functions in effect as our parapsychologist. He's an amazing young man. He's got 2 degrees in psychology.
Wow.
And he's been doing this for about 14 years.
Uh-huh.
Then we have Ron McKellen, who is a movie director and producer. He does a lot of our technical with the cameras.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have another young man. His name is Paul Reich, who has also works with our IP cameras and our computer equipment. Most everybody is handy enough with the equipment, depending on the size of the investigation, so everybody can, you know, switch this time from this piece of equipment to the next investigation. They're in charge of this.
I see.
And we generally try to do our EVPs in one section of a property at a time. And it doesn't matter how big a property is or how small, no matter how quiet the other team tries to be, the other one who's recording is always going to pick up things. So we do things a little bit different to help guarantee that we're not picking up ambient sounds or the unfortunate sneeze or laughter. So, you know, and we use two-way radios to where we can communicate between different teams, letting them know when we're in the process of doing something. So everybody, even if they're not in the same room, knows what's going on at that particular time.
I see. Now, all your investigations then are just strictly like private residents, people that are having problems with alleged hauntings?
Well, we do those as well as the historical landmarks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we try to keep certain people designated just for the residential cases, and then everyone else, of course, gets into the historical locations. And I do that primarily because some of the cases that we have worked over the years have turned rather nasty, and those aren't the kind of cases that I want to put just anybody into.
Right.
I prefer to put the people that have the most experience and have the temperament and psychological profile to where they can handle it, because they do get rather severe sometimes and extremely frightened. So you want to make sure you've got people that are going to be able to handle it.
Are all your investigations just strictly in Georgia then, or do you go all over the country?
No. Even though we are located in Georgia, I have investigated locations throughout the Southeast, portions of the Midwest, Missouri, Illinois, and Ohio. I'll go anywhere within reason that somebody needs us.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, first, being a member of the American Ghost Society, I do try to see if there's someone in their area who is capable and legitimate who could handle it.
Right.
But if the situation arises, I'll go anywhere they need us.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Some of the places that you've investigated, and looking over some of your bio, Waverly Hills Sanitarium, I know, a place I've always wanted to go to.
It's an amazing place.
That's what I heard.
Back in 07, we were there in Kentucky for a little over a week and got access on two separate weekends, and it was just amazing. I felt literally like a kid in a candy store. I mean, it's just incredible.
A lot of activity there then.
Oh, absolutely. And some of it's very subtle. Some of it you have to really pay attention to, and some of it is just right in your face. Jason Lewis and I, who were there for the first investigation, actually encountered a full body apparition.
Oh, did you?
And yes, and it was one of those situations to where we both were walking down the hallway. Within 15 to 20 feet of us, we saw what looked like a woman coming out of a doorway.
Mm-hmm.
And for anybody who's been to the Waverly, they know that it's extremely dark. There's not a lot of ambient light. They have exit signs and things like that, but other than that, it's just as dark as pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to see, you know, what appeared to be a woman step out of a doorway, and she looked right at us. She had hair to her shoulders. She appeared to be wearing glasses. And within 2 to 3 seconds, she turned around and went back into the same room, where we instantly went running after her. And when Jason and I hit the door, he went in one direction, and I went in the other, and there was nobody in the room, and there was no way for anybody else, you know, for her to gotten anywhere else.
Right.
We were on the second floor, and the windows were closed and locked. So, and then, of course, afterwards, both of us asked the other one, well, did you get a picture? And it's like, no, I was too busy trying to run and catch it. But, you know, and things like that happen. I mean, you know, it's, and people look at me like it's the old fish story, the big one that got away. But at least I know that I experienced it. Whether, you know, I really have any tangible proof or not, it was a wonderful experience, and I wouldn't trade it for anything.
I bet. I bet. Well, we're going to take a quick break. Are you in the chat room on Parax, Bob?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Okay, and Sarah Jane's in there. If any of our listeners have any questions, you can either ask Bob directly or through Sarah Jane, and I'll ask him over the air here. But we're talking to Bob Honeycutt from the Georgia Ghost Society. We're going to take roughly about a 5-minute break. Everybody can get a drink, and we'll be back in just a few minutes, so don't go away.
For the latest news in the paranormal world, listen to Soul Seekers Supernatural Radio live on Para-X every Friday night from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. London time. That's 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern.
Hey, what's up? This is my last week for Brad.
A public service network brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
This is Paramount's radio network.
If you would like to be a guest on Soul Seekers Radio, visit our website or contact us at soulseekers@ntlworld.com. Join the Soul Seekers live every Friday night from 9 to 11 p.m. London time, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern time for paranormal discussions with special guests from around the world, right here on Para X Radio.
When a child is abducted, every second counts.
That's why this station uses the Internet Radio Amber Alert System,
helping to keep your children safe. A free service of the Internet Broadcasting Community and this station.
All right, we're back. Welcome to Soul Seekers Supernatural Radio. I'm Gil, your host. Sarah Jane's in the chat room, and our special guest tonight is Bob Honeycutt from the Georgia Ghost Society. Hi, Bob.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, thanks. Welcome back. Sarah Jane has a question for you.
All right.
Does it annoy you when you know that you've seen a ghost or, you know, have evidence of a ghost, but people still say that you're crazy or you're nuts?
Well, to be honest with you, it used to bother me, but now I'm of the mindset that there are always going to be people that are going to be doubters and non-believers, and it's not my responsibility or place to try to convince them.
Right.
First of all, you know, our primary goal is to offer assistance to people that are experiencing these things in their home.
Mm-hmm.
And then our second job is to help promote the haunted locations that are historical landmarks. So as long as we can, you know, stay true and steadfast to that goal, I've had people that have seen some of the evidence that I present during presentations, and they've come up and tried to argue and offer alternate suggestions as to what could have caused it.
Mm-hmm.
And I let them go. I mean, you know, everybody's entitled to their opinion.
Sure.
But when you've been doing this long and you've witnessed and you've seen these things,
mm-hmm.
and you've gone through experiences that even Hollywood can't duplicate, then, you know, sooner or later something's going to happen and push them back this way. So then when they're ready, then we can talk.
Do you use psychics in your group?
Yes. Now, we don't have a psychic that is a member.
Mm-hmm.
One of our longtime members, Leanne Boggs, is a sensitive,
mm-hmm.
and she's been very effective. Not only is she a great investigator and team member, but her skills really work into certain situations where I think a medium or a psychic might be overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some psychics in the state that we work with, primarily one young lady in Atlanta, Reese Christian, who is phenomenal, and then another woman that lives up in North Georgia. Her name is Sharon Johns, and Sharon has been on a lot of the True TV and other shows with the psychic investigators.
Right.
And both of these women amazed me because they came up and started telling me things about myself that there's really no way they could have known, because even I didn't know at the time.
Mm-hmm.
First time I met Reese in person, she started telling me that I was going to have heart trouble.
Really?
And sure enough, within a year and a half, I was in the hospital with my first heart attack.
Oh, man.
So, you know, these are things that I believe that go way past coincidence.
Right.
It was not cold reading. I mean, this was dead on the mark. And Sharon Johns is just as phenomenal. And what amazes me, though, is the amount of people that have become psychic in the last 5 years. You've got people popping up out of the woodwork.
Oh, yeah.
That 5 years ago, they, you know, would look at you like you'd lost your mind, but today they're psychic. So, I don't know if the TVs have really, you know, like, sent out some waves that have really picked up the psychic connection or what. It is something to think about.
Yeah, it's the same over here. Now, Sarah Jane, she's sensitive. She hates being labeled a medium, but she's definitely sensitive and can pick things up. And, you know, she's actually one of our best tools when we do investigations, because she can often pick things up that, you know, the rest of us can't, and definitely any equipment can't. So we call her our early warning detection system.
There you go. That's exactly what we call the end, too.
Is it? Is it? How important, then, is equipment in your investigations?
Well, we do use a good bit of equipment, but I usually let people know that this is not ghost hunting equipment. It is not ghost detectors or ghost finders. Primarily the equipment we use are to measure and document atmospheric environmental changes,
right.
Things like EMF detectors, you know, static discharge detectors, the video cameras, the audio recorders. These are just things that we use to document what we're doing and what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've been lucky in many cases to where we have picked up, you know, anomalous photographs and video that, you know, otherwise with without the equipment, we may not have been able to witness it. And a lot of times these things don't happen right in front of you. You don't really see them until you go back
right.
and replay the video or the audio.
Sure.
But it's the equipment itself is a tool. It is not the end all. In other words, you know, when I first got started, it was before you had the camcorders and all this digital.
Mm-hmm.
I remember at one time I had a Instamatic Kodak camera and a little bitty reel-to-reel Craig tape recorder,
really?
And that was it. And of course a flashlight.
Really?
So I really think people take this equipment now and they use it as a crutch, that they put more emphasis on the equipment
right.
than on their doing with the equipment.
Right. I agree.
Because every year they're coming out with new gadgets, and some of them, you know, I think are beneficial, and some of them, I think, you know, are a great party item.
Well, there isn't any proof, is there, that any of these, you know, devices actually, you know, provide proof of the paranormal. You know, they may show, you know, changes in temperature and humidity and, you know, things like that, but, you know, in the end, it's all just theories anyways, but we always think the best piece of equipment is yourself, your body. You know, you're the best tool that you can use doing investigations. And if you're not out to prove anything, you know, and just insert for yourself, then that's all you need to go out and do the investigation sometimes.
I agree with you. And I constantly tell people, especially our team members, that the most important piece of equipment we have is our common sense.
Mm.
You know, you can get into a situation and the fear factor has picked up. Your body is just laced with, you know, all the dopamine and endorphins, and you're sitting there and you could hear every little noise, and you swear you hear this and you see this.
Right.
But in reality, you have to, you know, bring it back a notch or two and say, okay, well, you know, I know that it could have been this, so let's try to rule that out.
Right.
You know, and that's a good bit of what we do, is we try to rule out the natural causes.
Right.
Could it have been, you know, a loose pipe? Could it have been a cut or something in the air conditioner or heating ductwork?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you have to look at all of these, because a lot of times when people start hearing these things late at night in their home, to them it's haunted.
Sure.
And have been a lot of cases that we work, probably a good many of them, that really isn't anything paranormal or supernatural going on. And I think that the teams that go in and don't try to rule out these things first are really doing themselves and the clients a disservice.
Yeah, they are. Absolutely.
You know, it's not necessary to find every place haunted. And on the same aspect, the other teams, it's not necessary to go in and try to debunk everything.
Mm.
Rather, just keep a level head, go in and rule out what you think it could be,
mm-hmm.
and then with everything else, what's left over, hopefully, is what's going on.
Right. Now, say, for example, you know, a family calls you into their residence because they believe their house is haunted, and you go and you do your investigations, and you do find paranormal activity that can't be explained. What is your next step, you know, for the family that's living there to deal with what's going on? How do you handle that?
Well, of course, one of the first things that we do, well before we get into this, is we try to make sure and rule out any medical or psychological reasons for this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because people, you know, they're human beings.
Sure.
And they are susceptible to different diseases and situations to where they may be experiencing or hearing something, and it's because of something organic or chemical related.
Sure.
And then once we've, you know, kind of got that out of the picture, then we try to find out, you know, why is it going on? Has there been someone in the house that has taken a particular interest in the occult, whether it be Ouija boards or seances?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then we start getting back even deeper and deeper, especially with some of the more what we consider malevolent or demonic cases. We start looking at not necessarily is it them, but it could have been someone else inside the picture. In other words, we have worked cases where people were married to people that were into really different religious backgrounds,
mm-hmm.
Into some of the dark things like Santeria or Voodoo,
right.
And they've actually more or less have pledged these people in the name of their religion, and things kick up. And not to get into a theological debate or discussion, a lot of people nowadays go to homes and they see this activity and they automatically label it as demonic. And even though we can tell you with some certainty that I have worked demonic cases, they are not that evident.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go in there automatically thinking, okay, we're dealing with something nasty here. You have to be on your guard, but there, sure. Again, you have to use that common sense.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's never as easy as a rule book. You know, you have to look at each case individually. You have to look at the people involved individually and try to paint a picture. It's almost like putting a puzzle together.
Mm-hmm.
You take different pieces of information and try to paint a picture of what's going on. And while you've got a lot of cases that are very similar, each one is different and unique in its own way.
Sure. Do you believe in demonic or possession, not even demonic, possession at all?
Oh, yes. Yes, I absolutely do. Now, and I'll be the first one to tell you, I am not a demonologist. It is not something that I have ever endeavored to become, but there are cases that I have worked. And I can give you a good example of one. Several years ago, we had a client up in North Georgia, and I was working this case with Father Andrew Calder, who is an Episcopal priest in Georgia who is primarily works for these type of cases.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just he and I and husband and wife. The husband and wife were in bed, and a little after midnight she called out for us, and we went in, and she told us it's grabbing and touching my leg, and she pulled her leg out from under the covers, and you could actually see the skin on her calf as if it were being manipulated by fingers.
Wow.
And as I leaned over to take a photograph, I got grabbed. And it wasn't a case of brushing up against somebody else or, you know, coming up on the bed. This was a very distinct and purposeful grab and squeeze.
Wow.
And I'll give you a hint. It was in an area that most guys really aren't real crazy about being grabbed very roughly. So, you know, it really rattled me a little bit, and I stood up and I walked out of the room and then went outside and lit a cigarette. In a few minutes, Father Calder came out and asked me what had happened. And I told him, and he took out his holy water and sprinkled it, and he said, you know, why didn't you tell me? And I said, well, you know, the fear factor in there was already pagan. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't want to say or do anything that was going to escalate the situation.
Sure.
So, you know, we had a good laugh about it afterwards. and of course, the way and where he spread the holy water on me, then it looked like I could pee in my pants. So it was an interesting case, to say the least.
No kidding. Do you think that was possibly like an incubus or a succubus, actually?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was focusing on the wife. And the strange part was, is all during this, the husband was sound fast asleep. He had no idea any time that this happened. And this is very common in these kind of cases. This is what we call a psychic sleep. more or less to where he is incapacitated for a certain length of time until, you know, it's not a danger for him to be, you know, up and around.
Right.
This, and we noticed starting a few years ago, too, that a lot of the groups here in Georgia, as well as the rest of the country, really jumped on the bandwagon as working the demonic cases, mm-hmm. especially when they became very prevalent on television, on shows like The Haunting, right. and then Paranormal State.
Mm-hmm.
You had people coming out that had literally no experience or no training and no real religious faith background, and were calling themselves demonologists.
Really?
And we actually had a team contact us one time and ask, you know, what would you say if I told you this is what I want to do? What recommendation could you make?
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him, I said, well, let me ask you a question. If your next door neighbor had a pit bulldog that did not like you, would you jump in the backyard with that dog? And of course, everybody says, no. Of course not. Are you crazy? I said, well, then why would you do this?
Exactly.
Why would you want to get in the middle of this? It's not not for everyone. It's not for the faint of heart. And a lot of times it's, you know, people can get way over their head and escalate things and make them actually worse than they were.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did that case you were talking about where you were grabbed, what did you do after? Did you do anything to try and get rid of
Well, I didn't. Now, Father Calder went back and actually did an exorcism in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And even as long as he and I have worked together, I have not, nor do I really care to, take part in an exorcist or any type of ritual.
Right.
I've always told him I'm available if you need me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's a line that even that we don't need to step over.
Right.
You know, I'm satisfied to be an investigator and to document the evidence to provide proof to someone who can then come in and give them some type of, you know, relief or assistance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of, to me, it's kind of like, you know, if you're a bus driver, be a bus driver. Don't try to drive at Indy. And, you know, I'm already in the danger zone as it is. Why escalate it?
Sure.
You know?
We have a lot of groups over here that not only do they do the investigations, but when they find the property haunted, you know, they do what they call a house cleansing or a house clearing with their psychic. And
yeah.
I'm still on the fence on that one, whether I buy into it or if it's just, you know, just an effect, you know, for their whole investigation, because I don't know about there, but here there's a lot of groups, you know, that have jumped on the bandwagon and, you know, are all of a sudden experts in the paranormal field and do everything from, you know, finding your house is haunted and then get rid of all the spirits that are haunting the house. And, you know, it's, to some extent, it's gotten a bit ridiculous over here.
Well, it's the same thing here.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's a misnomer that a lot of people, you know, call themselves experts, because in the paranormal field, there's really no such thing.
Exactly.
None of this is carved in stone. It's all basically theory and conjecture,
mm-hmm.
and bits and pieces of information and the experiences that other investigators have tried to put together into something fluid.
Right.
Even people that I would consider experts, like John Zappas,
mm-hmm.
He will tell you that he is not an expert. And I think it gets to a point where people, you know, start looking at other fields of endeavor or jobs or careers. Just because they're an expert in this doesn't mean there's necessarily experts in this.
Right.
And everybody is going to have their own particular, you know, niche that's going to fit in. And I tell people in our group that any particular investigation that you do not feel comfortable with, anything like that, you know, you don't have to necessarily jump into it. If you would rather do something outside of the actual investigation as far as research and background, you know, that's fine. I don't want anyone in a situation where they're not completely comfortable.
Sure.
Because if they're factor is elevated, they're only going to escalate everyone else's. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't do anybody any good.
I agree. Now, I don't know about you, but with Sarah Jane on the team, we've had people claim that, you know, her being the psychic or having psychic abilities, she can actually cause manifestations to happen. Do you buy into that?
Well, I do know that certain activity can be attributed to, you know, elevated PK levels or psychokinesis,
mm-hmm.
but I wouldn't say necessarily that psychics themselves are the ones that go in and cause the activity, because if the activity was started already before the psychic ever got there, mm-hmm. then how did they do that?
Exactly.
I give, you know, certain psychics a lot of credit, and I know what some of them are capable of, but, you know, you've got people now that typically will group hauntings in one particular label. You've got, of course, you've got the religious right that mm-hmm. says everything is demonic.
Sure.
Then you've got the far left of the New Age community that says there's no demons, it's all human spirits.
Right.
You've got parapsychology that is saying that it's all enhanced and increased PK activity.
Sure.
And what I do is I say, well, why can't it be either or, a combination?
Right.
You can't go into every single case and automatically say, well, it's going to be this because I don't believe in that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have to get past the things that we may individually believe or disbelieve in and be open-minded. That's what skepticism really is. It's someone who has not already formed an opinion. Somebody that goes in and says, well, I don't believe in this. Well, you're not being open-minded. So therefore, you're not a skeptic, you're a non-believer.
Right.
You know, and again, there are certain things that I may not necessarily embrace or readily believe in, but I do hope that I have enough common sense to where I'm open to listen to their argument. And if you can prove me wrong and show me that you're right, you know, I'm not too good to say, you know, I was wrong.
Right. That's very respectful. Going back to, you know, the investigations, we were talking about, you know, when you got grabbed, but just before then, we were doing an example, if you investigated a family's property and it was indeed haunted, and how you would handle your next step in making the family, you know, come to terms with living with, you know, spirits in their home, or whether it was residual or an actual haunting or ghost. How do you go about doing that? What are your suggestions to them?
Well, a lot of it has to depend, too, is what does the family want? There have been some places that have been reported to be haunted, and they will tell me real quick, I just want validation. I don't want to get rid of it.
Right.
I think it's,
right.
You know, it's like it helps make the house what it is. Then you have other people that are just frightened to no end,
sure.
and they want it gone. So, you know, there again, you're getting back into that, putting the puzzle back together.
Mm-hmm.
And once we're able to get a pretty good idea of what we're dealing with, then we start looking into the why. You know, why is it haunted? You know, was this the scene of a horrendous murder?
Mm-hmm.
Was it where people were practicing some type of dark rituals? Was it, you know, there's so many different things you have to look into.
Right.
You know, it's just like with anything else. You know, you've got a problem, some type of infestation, but what is it, so you know what to use?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, if it's something that they are completely terrified of, and we think that it is hazardous to the family, then that's when we get with people like Father Calder,
mm-hmm.
Or other people that are, you know, well experienced in that particular aspect of it.
Right.
You know, it's funny because, especially now, you know, with the popularity again,
mm-hmm.
some people want their homes to be haunted. And, I mean, I've even seen on eBay where people are selling a ghost. You know, and of course, I don't put a lot of faith in that.
Right.
But, I mean, that has become, you know, so prevalent now that people want something that they can say is haunted or it's got ghosts. So you have to look at the motive for the family, you know. Right. And we've actually had people call us before and say, you know, we don't have anything going on, and I don't think we're haunted, but we sure would love for you to come out and see, because we'd love for it to be haunted. And, you know, if you come out, you know, we'll buy some pizza and some beer. And you can't help but laugh at them a little bit and tell them thank you, you know, for thinking of us, but right. That's necessarily what we do. And it's funny to a point now, because depending on what section of town or section of the country that you're in, mm-hmm. You know, they have their little areas, the historical places that are already known to be haunted. And the people that live in those areas, you know, now they want theirs to be haunted. You know, the historical homes that have been renovated. And
keep up with the Joneses.
I guarantee you, 10 years ago, people didn't want anything to do with it.
Oh yeah.
And now it's the end thing.
Sure.
So, you know, and I tell people all the time, you know, I was a ghost hunter when ghost hunting wasn't cool.
Well, we're talking to Bob Honeycutt from the Georgia Ghost Society, and also one of the representatives for the American Ghost Society. He's in the chat room on Para X. Your website again, Bob, for all the listeners out there.
Yes, it's www.georgiaghostsociety.com.
Okay, we're going to take another about 5-minute break. Everybody stay tuned and don't go away, and we'll be back with Bob and myself. Sarah Jane's in the chat room. So if you have any questions, feel free to ask, and we'll be right back.
Check out our website at soulseekers.org.uk.
Jeremy? Yes, Piggy? What are you listening to? Soul Seekers Radio, Piggy. But Sarah Jane's pretty, nice. Wait, Piggy, please don't hurt me, Piggy. Hi-ya!
Hi, this is Ozzy Osbourne. For many years, you know, I've had a drink problem. I'm trying to battle that problem every single day. But one thing I don't do, I don't drive my car when I'm drinking. I get someone to drive me. Do not drink and drive. It's the stupidest thing. If you drink, just don't drive. Not only are you going to hurt yourself, you may hurt some other person, and you wouldn't want that in your country, would you?
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Join the Soul Seekers live every Friday night from 9 to 11 p.m. London time, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern time, for paranormal discussions with special guests from around the world, right here on Para X Radio.
This is the Para-X Radio Network.
For the latest news in the paranormal world, listen to Soul Seekers Supernatural Radio live on Para-X every Friday night from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. London time. That's 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern.
When a child is abducted, every second counts.
That's why this station uses the Internet Radio Amber Alert System,
helping to keep your children safe. A free service of the Internet Broadcasting Community and this station.
This is James Riley from Ballisticetta, and you are listening to the best in everything paranormal on Soul Seekers Supernatural Radio.
Hello, everybody. We're back again for our second hour on Soul Seeker Supernatural Radio. I'm Gil, your host, and tonight's guest is Bob Honeycutt from the Georgia Ghost Society. Hi, Bob. Welcome back.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Great having you. It's been a great show. We really enjoy having you on, and we appreciate it. Let's get into some of the places you've done investigations, and which was your favorite and maybe the most haunted place that you've been to.
Well, I have to say, without hesitation, that one of the most favorite places that I've investigated repeatedly is a southern plantation in Covington, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the Gaithers Plantation. This was an honest-to-goodness cotton plantation. It was built in the mid-1840s. They had at one time well over 300 acres and over 100 slaves.
Mm.
It had a lot of history with both the Union and Confederate soldiers, because they were Confederate sympathizers, so their stories of them hiding troops in the house and the Union soldiers coming in searching for them.
Mm-hmm.
There's also some history of one of the sons getting into an argument with one of the neighboring farmers, and in a heated moment accidentally killed him. So he left and went to Texas, and the story is that he was never able to return home.
Mm-hmm.
They now use this property. It's owned by the county, and they use it for weddings and receptions, and they've also filmed motion pictures there.
Mm-hmm.
The latest one that I can recall was the Tyler Perry movie Madea's Family Reunion.
Huh.
And this is the actual house where they had the reunion filmed at.
Uh-huh.
Over the last 5 or 6 years, I've been there at least 3, maybe 4 dozen times.
Wow.
And on very few occasions have we been there that something didn't happen, whether it's very minute or very subtle.
Mm-hmm.
And then some nights it's extremely active. They had a reporter in a couple of Halloweens ago that was going to spend the night, and by 9 o'clock in the evening, she left and would not come back.
Really?
Yes, yes.
That's
and I can tell you, too, that the very first time that we went, we had a couple of new team members, and then after that investigation, we never heard from them again. They wouldn't return our phone calls or emails. And you know, it's one of those things where we tell people, you know, because they're always saying, well, I want to see something. I want to see a ghost.
Sure.
And I tell them, be careful what you ask for, because might get it.
Exactly.
And I think this was a good example.
Huh. What other kind of activity, what kind of things did you pick up there?
Oh, we're always getting auditory phenomena. There have been times when we've been upstairs, and naturally you hear whispering or footsteps downstairs. There's been a couple of times we've picked up whistling.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some really interesting photographs taken outside where, during the sessions where we have all the lights and power turned off inside the house,
mm-hmm.
We've got a photograph that looks like somebody walking by one of the windows, either carrying a lantern or a candle.
Really?
Yeah, oh yes. And, we've actually gotten a video of one of the rocking chairs upstairs rocking on its own.
Oh, great.
So it's an extremely active house, and if I went every day for the rest of my life, I'd never get tired of it.
Really? You said it's in Covington, Georgia. I'm not familiar what part of Georgia that time?
Well, it's not. Covington is maybe an hour from here. Mm-hmm. You know, if people want to check the website out, it's gaither.com. As a matter of fact, I'll find the link and I'll post it on the chat space in here in just a minute.
Okay.
But they have been extremely open and receptive to us. We were the first group that went in and investigated, and since then they've allowed other groups in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of these places that as soon as you drive up, because it's out in the middle of nowhere, and you go, you've got big fields of cattle and other livestock. And when you're out there at night, especially when you turn the power off, it is pitch black. You can see more stars than grains of sand on a beach. It's phenomenal.
Now, you said they contacted you?
Yes, yes, they contacted us, you know, especially after some of the people that worked for the county started having experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they more or less wanted some validation.
Okay.
So, you know, we went out and typically we will share, you know, any photographs or audio that we get that are positive.
Mm-hmm.
And then that way, if it's something that they really want to promote, then they have, you know, a tangible copy of the evidence that we've collected.
Okay.
And a lot of these places, if they'd like one, we will give them a certificate that does not certify them as being haunted. It simply states that we did conduct an investigation and that we did collect documentation. And a lot of the places, you know, nowadays they're very open to that. And unfortunately, there are still some sections of Georgia, and Macon is one of them. We have historic places here in Macon that have been included in a number of books about ghosts, but they do not want any part of it. I think they're afraid that people will first consider them haunted. Mm-hmm. Before thinking of them as a historical location.
Right.
And it's really sad, because we try to let people know that part of the reason that we look into the history is often that's where you can get the information as to why it may be haunted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, scientifically you cannot prove, and I seriously doubt you'll ever be able to prove that ghosts and hauntings exist.
Right.
Because you're not able to recreate it on command.
Right.
And that's the scientific principle that they rely on. But I do believe in some situations and cases you can prove that it's haunted historically. And a good example of this would be a house that had been built a little over 100 years ago. The family was experiencing activity. They were hearing footsteps and voices. They were seeing an apparition of an older man at the back of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And you do a little checking and you find out about previous tenants, people who had lived there before.
Right.
And sure enough, they had also been experiencing very similar activity. And when you took a photograph of the man who had built the house, who originally lived in the house, and take it to them, all three families said, that's who I saw.
Oh, really?
And there's no evidence that the families were talking to each other beforehand. They never knew or had met each other. And since they were all, you know, pretty much sharing the same activity and the same experiences, and they all pointed out the same gentleman in the photograph, we considered that pretty proof positive.
Mm-hmm.
That they were experiencing the same thing.
Right. That's really cool. Speaking of, you know, proving, you know, whether ghosts exist or not, over here in England, bookies are legal. You know, you've got bookie shops everywhere, and one of the biggest bookies here has a bet with one of the hosts of a radio show, Glastonbury Radio here, £1 million for anybody that can prove that ghosts exist.
Well, that'd be great. What criteria is he asking for his proof to?
I'm not sure. That's probably the catch. You know, it's up to them to decide. So I doubt if they're going to part with their £1 million. Do you have any problems over there with, you know, we call them venues here, obviously, but places that have also, you know, we talked about ghost hunting groups have jumped on the bandwagon, but locations that have sort of jumped on the bandwagon to charge excessive amounts of money to paranormal groups that want to do investigations.
Well, now there are some, and fortunately here in Georgia, most of the really good locations do not charge us anything. Mm-hmm. And there again, because it's a beneficial relationship for both them and us.
Right.
And I do know there are places like the Waverly in Kentucky where, you know, it is a pretty good stiff charge mm-hmm. to be able to get in. And I can understand this to a point, mm-hmm. but when you have that many people going in on a repeated basis, mm-hmm. you know, to me it would make more sense instead of dealing necessarily in quantity is try to lower the prices a little bit to where you still have the control of how many people come in. But I guarantee you, when it's priced a little bit lower, more people will come more often.
Oh, absolutely.
And the same thing can be said a lot of the events, conferences, and conventions here in the States.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are very reasonably priced, and then some of them are ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I don't know about most people, but I would find it very difficult to spend $300 for an event when you look at both lodging and travel and then
sure.
food. And I think that's sometimes it can be a bit excessive.
Oh, yeah. There's places here, well, especially, you know, since Most Haunted came on television here, venues, especially places that Most Haunted's visited, that charge up to, I've heard, even up to like £10,000 for the night for paranormal investigators to come in and do an investigation there, which is just outrageous.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, to them, they're using it as a cash cow.
Sure.
And I don't have a problem, you know, with people trying to make money. I mean, you know, I'm not a socialist. But, you know, most people that are in this field are the young or the older.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, I feel for them because a couple hundred dollars, you know, twice a month or every other month to be able to go somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you've got so many people. I know that the Waverly, and I hate to use that or single it out, but you've got people that come in there, you know, 100 at a time.
Wow.
And even though there are four or five floors, one of the situations we had the second time we went was there were people walking everywhere. Sure. You really couldn't set up equipment to try to do anything because mm-hmm. here they come with their flashlights. And the ones that drive me crazy are the flashlights they wear on their head like somebody going frog gigging. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
And they come in and, you know, they're looking around going like, well, what's all this stuff? But, you know, you can't help people for really being interested because it's, you know, it's everywhere now.
Sure.
On the internet, on television, on radio, in bookstores. But I think it would be better for people that really own these places and do these events would look at, you know, I think they would get a lot more response and more positive response if it didn't quite cost so much money.
Mm. The other big thing over here now is the tour companies. They aren't actually tour companies. They claim to be, you know, ghost hunting groups, but they'll take so many 20, 30 people to a location and charge £80 for the night, you know, to go spend the night in a haunted location. And that's become a big money maker over here also. I don't know about there.
Well, I know there's some areas that do it, and it's even something that we have discussed doing ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem you run into, especially when you're talking about spending the night at a haunted location, you cannot guarantee that they're going to experience anything.
Sure.
And I've learned a long time ago that if they don't want to come out and play, they're not going to.
Exactly.
So how are you in good conscience going to take money when you really can't guarantee that they're going to do anything more than sleep on a sleeping bag in the floor and be a little uncomfortable.
Right.
So, and I guess part of it has to do that, you know, I do have a very serious conscience, and I've had people argue with me, even in my own family. You know, they can't believe that I don't charge for what I do, you know, as far as investigation.
Right.
And I told them, you know, I'm not like a doctor or a lawyer, you know, that's going to give them something tangible or a service that I can guarantee results.
Right.
There's some things or some lines that I just don't think you can cross.
Mm.
And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact of why I do it. I'm doing it to help others and not trying to put money in my pocket.
Right.
My wife will tell you that I spend more money each year getting to these events.
Mm-hmm.
And my manager, Vanessa, she could tell you the same thing. I make very little money doing this.
Right.
And we have even set up our group now. It is considered an unincorporated association because we, you know, we are trying to run it like a business, and we don't want people to think that we're getting money and putting it in our own pockets.
Mm.
You know, what few donations we get go right back into our treasury. Mm-hmm. To pay for our websites and equipment and batteries, things like that.
Right.
So I think there's a line that you shouldn't cross, and I think some people really come close to beating that line to death.
Oh, yeah, they do. We never charge either, and we had a couple call us up because, you know, they thought their house had paranormal activity, which it does, and, you know, we've become friends with them. But they told us, you know, later that they were hesitant because when they initially called us, they, of course, asked how much we charge. We told them we don't charge anything. And they were hesitant to have us come out because we didn't charge anything. I don't know if that's just the cultural difference between England and America, but, you know, we were sort of surprised to hear them say that. You know, they said they probably would have felt better if we told them we charged them £100 or something, which I found really strange, but... But
you know, I've even heard of situations like that here. You know, and that's one of the first questions that I'm asked, you know, depending on what they're calling for, you know, whether it's for me to come out and speak or for us to come out and do an investigation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to be able to present yourself as professional because you don't charge, and some people may look at you as being, you know, like a hobbyist or something because
right.
you don't charge. So, I never have been able to understand how people look at things sometimes.
I know.
It's ridiculous. You know, I guess maybe what we ought to do is for them that say, well, if you don't charge anything, we'd rather not have you come out and, you know, okay, well, we'll take $10. How about that?
Yeah, sure.
We'll take it and donate it to our favorite charity or something.
Yeah, there you go. But like I said, we stay in contact with him and, you know, gotten to be friends with him. And he's a corporate banker, and he still insists every time we see him, you know, you should be charging money for this. You should be making money off this. But no, we just, you know, we love to help people. It's a good feeling. And
yeah.
Educate them, and if we can help them, you know, we do. If there's nothing we can do for them, then, you know, we obviously tell them that. But it's interesting how people think.
Oh, I agree. I mean, and I think, again, too, it really comes from their background and their experiences. And everybody's got their own right to the things they believe in and how things should be done.
Sure. Is there somebody that you looked up to, or as far as, you know, in the paranormal world, somebody that was sort of a mentor?
Well, probably there are two people that I would consider, or even three now at this point. John Zaffis,
mm-hmm.
Patrick Burns, and Father Calder. When I would work in the cases with Father Calder, it was, you know, a completely new aspect of the paranormal for me. That I really hadn't even considered wanting to get into. So, you know, he was very beneficial
in helping to teach me how to deal with these particular cases and what to do, what not to do. Patrick Burns has been a tremendous help and mentor, especially for me getting out and public speaking, because that's a real passion of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he has an event every year here. He calls his event Ghost Stop. And this year it's going to be in Salem, Massachusetts.
Oh, is it?
And, yes, and I mean he's been a really good friend and a really big help. John Zappas, you know, the Godfather. He's such a funny man. What you see of him on television on these shows doesn't give a very accurate depiction of John Zappas. John is probably one of the funniest men I've ever met in my life. Of course, he has this serious side, but when I first met John in public, it was at an event in Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
And we were there for the entire weekend, and I lucked up somehow and ended up sharing the same house with him for a weekend.
Oh, really?
And I laughed that entire weekend so hard that, you know, my stomach muscles hurt for 3 days. And the great thing about these people is that you can pick up the phone and say, you know, I've got a situation. Let me get your input on this. You know, make sure I'm on the right page.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I've tried to do the same thing with the newer groups when they come to me. We need to really learn to work together a little better.
I agree.
There's a lot of animosity and competition.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be the first one to admit that, you know, sometimes when I've had enough of somebody, you know, making comments and statements, that I will typically jump right back, and I probably shouldn't do that, because mm-hmm. it's kind of like the old bully theory,
right.
You know. If I don't react, then, you know, they're not going to get any thrill out of it, and they'll leave me alone. But, you know, nowadays you've got so many people trying to get their 15 minutes of fame.
Sure.
And people that want their own television show, and it's really gotten ridiculous to a point. I've done several television pilots. These were other people's projects. It was not my own.
Mm-hmm.
And no, I never got a television show, but I'm not disappointed, because I didn't get into this to be a TV star.
Right.
I don't consider myself a celebrity. And to be honest with you, I would rather be considered a paranormal investigator than a celebrity.
Right. That's good. Do you have any words of advice for anybody listening that's thinking of getting into, you know, ghost hunting, or has just gotten into ghost hunting?
Well, this is not your average hobby or activity. You're in situations at night in the dark where you can, you know, be physically hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Something happens and you get scared, you run, you fall, you break your leg. So first off, don't ever do this just by yourself. Right. I think that's, you know, paramount to danger.
Sure.
There's no sense tempting fate. And I do recommend that instead of you trying to start your own team or group
mm-hmm.
right away, find someone in your area that's been doing this for a few years.
Sure.
And learn it from the ground up. You won't know what real stress is until you are responsible for the safety and welfare of 12 other people in a haunted location. And each one of my team members, I consider them, you know, best of friends, members of my family.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I try to make sure that they are safe and well taken care of. And if I'm trying to learn how to do something at the same time, how can I adequately watch after them?
Sure.
So, you know, get with somebody. I don't care if you have to drive 50 miles. If you're going to do this, do it the right way.
Right.
And, you know, find someone that you respect that's been doing it for a while, and listen. Listen. I didn't say that enough. Listen to what they tell you.
Right.
You know, don't be afraid to ask questions. There's no such thing as a stupid question.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to do it the right way.
And if you're only doing this because you think you can get a television show or that you become famous or rich, you might as well get it, because I'm not rich, I'm not famous, and I'm not a television star.
You need to think again.
Yes.
It's different if you're got a true fascination for the paranormal and, you know, want to delve into it deeper and get answers for yourself and, you know, find out if there's life after death. I agree with that. But to do it for the wrong reasons, which unfortunately a lot of the groups out there now do, is just sort of sad, really. I did a podcast for all our listeners. I had a special podcast I recorded last night with Ray Jordan, and he was with International Paranormal Radio on Para X for a while, and he's a paranormal investigator over here in England, and that podcast should be up tonight. I think Tom and Dave are playing it in rotation now, but he and I discussed a lot of that last night, mm-hmm. people being in it for the wrong reasons, and how the groups now really need to unite and get together to work together instead of against each other, which seems to be happening more and more. Like you said, there's so much competition and seems to be backstabbing and, you know, working against each other instead of working together.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we've seen time and time and time again people that have gotten into this just for that.
Sure.
They really don't have any real interest or real experience. And the ones that really upset me the worst are the ones that latch on to certain people in the community, paranormal community, in hopes of riding their wave of popularity into something for themselves.
Exactly.
And that is rampant.
It is.
I mean, it is terrible. It's epidemic. Yeah. And I'm ashamed to say that it's only going to get worse before it gets better.
Right. That's exactly the exact words Ray said last night. That's interesting. He said the same thing. We're going to take another quick break here. We're talking to Bob Honeycutt from the Georgia Ghost Society. Everybody stay tuned. Don't go away, and we'll be right back.
Check out our website at soulseekers.org.uk.
This is James Riley from Ballistic Etna, and you are listening to the best in everything paranormal on Soul Seekers Supernatural Radio. We'll be right back.
This is the Para-X Radio Network.
All right, we're back. Welcome to Soul Seeker Supernatural Radio. Our guest tonight is Bob Honeycutt, as everybody knows, from the Georgia Ghost Society. Hi, Bob.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. I have a question for you.
All right.
Do you guys ever do any investigations during the daytime?
Yes, we do. And that's a good question, because I think a lot of people mistakenly look at locations as only being viable at night.
Exactly.
And some of the most haunted locations that we're aware of have activity during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people are rather doing it at night so they can use all of the neat cameras and things. But,
right.
You know, we will typically get started at a location well before dark.
Mm-hmm.
Just for that particular reason. And unfortunately, a lot of the residences and businesses, especially if they're open during the day, kind of makes, you know, investigating it during the week, you know, impossible.
Sure.
But any time that they'll let us come and stay for the entire day and evening, you know, we really relish it, because it's an opportunity to investigate it in all different times of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And some places are more active during the day than they are at night, especially the residual hauntings.
I agree.
You know, and one of the things that we're really looking forward to this year, we're going to be investigating Pickett's Ridge, which is a big Confederate battlefield, and we will be investigating it on the anniversary of the investigation. So we'll be up here during the day and night.
Oh, that should be excellent. Still there?
Oh, yes, I'm here.
Okay. I thought I lost you for a second. Have you been to England before?
No, I have not, but I want to so badly, it's not funny. You know, some of the locations that I've read about and seen on different documentaries, and to hear other people talk, you know, the Great British Isles are someplace I would love to spend a year at. Because some of the locations are so old and historical, and you know, are famous for being haunted.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's that kid at the candy store again.
Exactly. I was amazed when I came over here just how old some of the buildings are. There's a church. It's maybe about 3 miles from here, and it's from the 11th century. You know, and they still use it today. Built in the 1000 something, and it's amazing. Ireland's the same way. I know Danny from Leinster Paranormal's on. He said hello to me. Hi, Danny. Glad you could listen tonight. Ireland's another beautiful place, and excellent places to do investigations also. But if you come over here, you'll definitely have to hook up with us, and we'll show you
around. Oh, absolutely.
It's amazing. Just the history alone, you know, from the Romans and even before then, and all the
investigated in all. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, and it's definitely something I've got for long-range plans, because I'd love to come over and spend a good bit of time. It's one of those type of places to where I don't think a year would give me adequate time to go to all the locations. One of the ones that really sticks out in my mind that I really want to go to is, I can't remember the name of it, but the cemetery is where they have Gray Friar Bobby, the dog.
Not familiar with that one.
I remember that it was like an English nobleman who is buried there, and when he died, his dog mourned for him so bad that he stayed there at the cemetery, and then when he died, they buried the dog there too, and there's a statue. And evidently, they've had quite a bit of activity on the property. Some of it negative, but it's one of those kind of places that when you see it on television, it's like, oh, I have got to go there.
Yeah, I've heard, now that you mention it, I've heard the story, but I don't know where that's at. I don't know which cemetery that's at. But yeah, that would be good. There's just so many places over here. It's just, you can just go anywhere, and you've got so many haunted locations. It's amazing.
You know, it's funny because I was asked a couple of years ago that if I had my pick of any place in the world to go investigating, where would I go? And I said Britain. You know, you've got all these other countries where the castles and, right. and all of that, but there's just, there's something about England and Ireland and Scotland. There's so much history there. It just, I mean, that is a dream. That would be a dream come true for me. So if anybody out there wants to help me get there, I'll be glad. I'll be glad to go with you.
Last weekend, we went out for a day out. We went to Queen Elizabeth's Hunting Lodge, which is still standing. It's one of the, I think it's the last remaining hunting lodge that was built. Henry VIII built it for Queen Elizabeth. And it's not known whether he actually was in the hunting lodge, but definitely Queen Elizabeth was there. They were both avid hunters, and you know, just to be standing in the same building where, you know, they used to go and spend weekends, it's just, you can almost feel it when you walk through the door, and just everything is just so old and restored, you know, to the way it was. It's amazing, because America's history obviously isn't that old, a few hundred years, but over here everything, you know, 1,000 years old. It's incredible.
Yeah, and you know, that's, I don't think people really take it in proper perspective, because yeah, we do have a lot of historical locations.
Oh sure.
But even if you went back, you know, to as early as the late 1600s, 1700s, that still doesn't, you know, compare to some of the British countries and European countries that have had civilizations there for centuries upon centuries.
Right, exactly.
And the amazing thing that I don't think a lot of people realize is that a lot of these places are where some of the earliest hauntings, you know, were talked about and documented.
Mm-hmm.
There have been hauntings way before recorded time.
Sure.
So to get an opportunity to go to some of these places would just, that would be it.
Well, Ireland, you know, they say that's where, you know, the first man civilization was started. And it's just such a beautiful country over there. We spent a summer, about 3 months over there, and just didn't want to leave. Just, it's beautiful. Words can't even express how beautiful it is there, and just old and clean, and just the castles there are amazing also.
Yeah.
And there's a lot more paranormal groups, you know, coming out over there also, as there is here, because it's more acceptable now than it used to be with the programs that are on television. You know, in Ireland, obviously, with the religious beliefs there, but nowadays it's more acceptable. People are more open to believe in ghosts, which is
good. You know, because it wasn't that long ago when people would hear what it is that I do, and they would sit and listen attentively for a few minutes, and then you could see that look.
Right.
Of, you know, I can't believe that I've been sitting here listening to this crap. And people would actually, we'd go out to eat or have our meetings or something, and, you know, naturally, at first, people are leaning over, you know, trying to hear what you're saying, and then next thing you know, people are getting up and scooting down, you know, and I think a lot of people have the preconceived notion that people in the paranormal are automatically into human sacrifice and voodoo and bones hanging them around.
Right.
And you know, it's, I'd like to think that most everybody in the group, including myself, was just pretty much down to normal, everyday average person.
That's, I've talked to other guests about this before, you know, about the pros and cons of all the television programs, you know, that are out there now. And, you know, the good thing is, like we just mentioned, is the public's more ready to admit, you know, they believe in ghosts without people thinking they're crazy. And, you know, one of the cons, obviously, is all the people that have come out of the woodwork, like we talked about. You know,
yeah.
So there's good and bad that have come out of all the programs on there. But even the European countries now that have never really believed in the paranormal or admitted they did are starting to open up, like Germany and France and other countries are becoming more, you see more groups starting in those countries also.
Well, I mean, you know, with, you know, the media attention both on television and radio, it's amazing how people look at things differently once it's on television.
Oh, sure.
You know, it went from being an obscure, you know, whispers in the dark, you know, hush hush, to everybody wanting to be involved to some degree or another.
Right.
And I think the television shows have done a certain amount of good. My biggest problem is I do not or very rarely watch a lot of paranormal television. And it's because I know that it's television, it's entertainment, they have to do a great deal of editing to get a number of hours down to either half hour to an hour format.
Sure.
And people that are new to this or really don't have a, you know, much of a clue what really goes on, takes it at face value and thinks, well, this is just how it is, and it's not. And I'm very critical. I'm one of these that I sit and I look for mistakes. I remember one of the first episodes of Ghost Hunters, and they're doing EVP with a little micro cassette.
Right.
They weren't using the microphone. So, you know, after a while, my wife told me, you know, just quit watching it because you're driving yourself nuts. They can't hear you from the sofa.
That sounds familiar. What other projects are you working on?
Well, for the last couple of years, I've been working on a 3-year project with Southland Films on a documentary series that we are calling The Seekers, Investigating Southern Haunts.
Oh.
I can't say what network is looking at it right now, but it is being looked at one of the cable networks.
Excellent.
I don't know that it'll ever be picked up or not, but it would be nice. My biggest thing that I'm doing besides the investigation are public speaking appearances. February 28th, I'll be in Shreveport, Louisiana, at a brand new event called Le Festival des Esprits.
Oh, really?
I guess that's how they say it in France. I'm not very good at it. In March, I will be back in Birmingham at Imagicon. And then later in the same month, I'll be in Oklahoma at Paracon. So it's going to be a busy year. We've got a lot of things lined up, and hope to keep running just as fast and hard as I can until my little heart gives out.
Well, hopefully that won't be for a long time. Now, can people contact you if they want you as a speaker?
Absolutely. I am signed with Parker Sloan Talent. They can go to either our MySpace page or our website and get the contact information, but it's Parker Sloan Talent. They have a website, and their website is Parker and Sloan, P-A-R-K-E-R, and Sloan, S-L-O-A-N.com, and they can look under paranormal and then speakers. And Chuck is a very good man. He's been in the talent agency business for quite a while, dealing with bands and actors, and now he's ready to get into the paranormal as well.
Excellent. And your MySpace?
Our MySpace is MySpace/Georgia and Ghost Society, and in this case it's not spelled out, it's just GA Ghost Society. And you know, we're open for anybody to be able to look at us and send us messages. And also, if somebody needs to call us, they can call our offices at 478-238-1701.
Okay.
And, you know, if it's late in the evening, you know, please leave a message and someone in the office will call you back the very next day.
Okay. Your website, we'll give that out again.
www.georgiaghostsociety.com, and in this case you spell out Georgia. You know, it's like I say, this is an informational website primarily. It doesn't have a lot of the paranormal evidence. It's more of an informational source for people who are looking for assistance. And you know, we've got some good team members, a lot of people that I'm very proud of, They are very dedicated, and they have made my job a lot easier. I look good because they make me look good.
That's really good. I think that's really important. The teams, you know, got to work well together and get along. Our team, we have a small team. There's just five of us at the moment. So, and we like keeping it that way because we all know how we work together. You know, we all have are certain things that we're better at, and we support each other, and I think that's so important in teams, you know, because you don't want people that work against you. You have to work together to achieve what your goal is and to help other people.
I agree. You know, and these, you know, I've worked with some of them for so long now that they're not just friends anymore, they're members of the family.
Right.
And, you know, they're very dedicated. They work very hard. They take on responsibilities and jobs and don't get paid for it. And this is on top of them already working,
exactly.
Having families, going to school. So, you know, I was lucky because we, you know, got people involved that are really wanted to do something more than just go somewhere in the dark and get scared.
Right. Do you have any investigations coming up in the near future?
Oh, absolutely. We've got one tomorrow night at a bed and breakfast in North Georgia. Then we've got another one in 2 weeks at a private residence up around North Georgia. You know, this is the time of year that we start getting our cases scheduled in advance.
Mm-hmm.
We're pretty much booked up through the end of March,
mm-hmm.
and as time goes on, we'll continue to get more. Typically, the historical locations, we try to put them in order as they come in, unless, you know, their scheduling requires, you know, immediate attention. And of course, the residential cases that are asking for help, you know, we try to work on them immediately as possible.
Right, exactly. One place I need you to tell me about, because I love this place, and that's in Savannah, Georgia. And that's the Pirate's House.
Oh, yes, the Pirate House restaurant. It's a great spot. We've investigated it 3 times now.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't get a lot of activity, or we weren't able to capture a lot of activity. But it is such an interesting place at night when everybody has left and you're the only ones in the building. And it adds a certain air to it with all the history of the pirates.
Right.
And it's a great place. Savannah is, without a doubt, my favorite city as far as ghost hunting goes. We've investigated, along with Pirate's House, the Moon River Brewery,
mm-hmm.
The B. Matthews Bakery. And, you know, as time goes on and we get into more and more places, the list will continue to grow. I'll go ahead and give you and Sol an invitation, an open invitation, that any time that you get over here to the States, come on down here to Georgia, and we'll have you go with us.
Oh, we'd love to. Sarah Jane loves Savannah also. We spend a little time there. And my dad took me to the Pirate's House restaurant when I was a teenager, and I just remember it vividly. It was such a cool place. But, yeah, we'd love to come over and spend some time and do some investigations. And likewise, if you guys make it over here, you're more than welcome. There's so much to do and see and investigate here. It's just
all right.
It's just endless. And Bob, we really appreciate you coming on the show tonight. It's been excellent. I'm sure our guests have really thoroughly enjoyed it.
I've enjoyed it. I really have. You guys are great, and I appreciate you having me.
Well, thanks so much again. Keep up the good work, and we'd love to have you back.
All right, anytime, just let me know.
Okay, and everybody, thanks for listening. Next Friday, we won't be on the air because actually we're working on a project, a big investigation all weekend next weekend. So the following Friday, which I believe is the 6th of February, we'll be back on. So be sure to check out the Parax website about our guest and reminders, and the podcast for this show will be up hopefully by morning, your time. Everybody, thanks for listening, and Bob, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you. All right, everybody. Bye-bye.
Broadcasting live from London. London every Friday, 9 to 11 p.m., 4 to 6 Eastern, the Soul Seekers bring you the latest topics and most influential guests in the paranormal world, right here on Para-X Radio.
When a child is abducted, every second counts.
That's why this station uses the Internet Radio Amber Alert System,
helping to keep your children safe. A free service of the Internet Broadcasting Community and this station.
Check out our website at soulseekers.org.uk.
This is the Para-X Radio Network.